Father Cohn has died at the age of 84. He was speaking on Democracy Now! In 2015 in Washington, D.C., after the Cuban embassy was reopened there for the first time in 54 years. The Trump administration put Cuba back on the list of state sponsors of terrorism in 2021. Biden has not reversed President Trump's reversing Obama's normalization process for Cuba. To see the whole interview, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
Are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor Portland Folk Music Society concerts. The series continues on Saturday, May 21st, with a trio of Latina singer-songwriters, Tish Hinojosa, Stephanie Urbina Jones, and Patricia Vaughn, the Texicana Mamas. The Mamas use music and emotion to express their bicultural life experiences and strong pride in their Mexican-American heritage. The Portland Folk Music Series in Southeast Portland continues through June. For information, go to kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, use of force by police against people with mental illness has risen in Portland despite federal oversight. A weekend rally for Republican governor candidate Stan Pulliam attracted counter-protesters, and in international news, the war in Ukraine continues as civilians are evacuated from the port city of Mariupol and the EU plans to announce a Russian oil embargo. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 2nd, 2022. I'm Althea Billings. Sandy Mayor and Republican gubernatorial candidate Stan Pulliam says he was attacked during a campaign event in downtown Portland over the weekend. Video provided by his campaign shows a group of counter-protesters dressed in all black at his event at Chapman Square in Portland on Saturday. One video appears to show someone in the group throwing a smoke grenade at Pulliam and his supporters. Another video shows members of the group pounding on a campaign bus. According to Pulliam, the group also threw flashbangs, eggs, feces, and paint at the rally. Pulliam is running from the far right and has been accused of a homophobic and anti-trans bias. He's also claimed that the 2020 presidential election was stolen, despite a number of state and county recounts and dismissed lawsuits proving that it wasn't. Pulliam issued a statement Saturday that said he and his supporters had been attacked by Antifa, the term for self-declared anti-fascist activists who frequently attend protests. In a second Saturday statement, Pulliam said if elected governor, he will triple the size of the Oregon State Police, deputizing a portion of them as U.S. Marshals to charge violent criminals with federal crimes, stop all state public and rental assistance to anyone convicted of rioting, and launch investigations into public servants who have been ignoring the violence, including Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt. Police and Portland Fire and Rescue arson investigators responded to the scene on Saturday. Police said that by the time they arrived, the suspects had left the scene and no immediate arrests were made. PPB added that the investigation is continuing. Use of force by police against people with mental illness has risen in Portland since the U.S. Department of Justice sued the city in 2012. Despite federal oversight from that lawsuit, the Portland Police Bureau has shown a disproportionate use of violence against people with mental illness. KBOO's Josh Salem has more on the story.
The City of Portland and the U.S. Department of Justice were in federal court on Friday, discussing an amendment to the 2014 settlement agreement governing the Police Bureau's use of force. U.S. District Court Judge Michael Simon did accept the proposal. The news section laid out steps to bring the city back into compliance with the settlement, while setting the stage for resolution of other difficult issues the city, police union, and federal prosecutors have been trying to resolve. Portland has been out of compliance for more than a year. For example, there have been more than 6,000 documented uses of force during racial justice protests. In January of 2021, the policy proposals were put on hold, so negotiators for the city and the Portland Police Association could finalize a union contract at least a year into negotiations. As part of the amended agreement, the city has some 7 months to adopt a police body-worn camera program. This is particularly difficult as it is not clear what policies regulate those cameras. The city and Department of Justice wanted to limit when officers can view their body camera footage after use of force incidents. The police union wants officers to be able to view the footage before writing their reports, in a practice known as pre-review. 20 of the 22 largest cities in the country do allow for pre-review, but the Department of Justice says common practice does not make best practice. Friday's court decision codifies the Justice Department's right to go back to federal court if they do not like the outcome of those additional discussions. The newly added section also gives the city 60 days to begin identifying lieutenants and other high-ranking leadership who failed to properly train and oversee the use of force during the 2020 racial justice protests. In addition, the amended section requires the police bureau to hire a civilian dean to oversee the training division curriculum. That hiring process is already underway. Judge Simon said he was optimistic overall and acknowledged that progress toward meeting the terms of the settlement agreement may not always be at the pace the public would like. They said, quote, "I do think our backwards movement is and has been outweighed by forward movement. Overall, we are moving in a net forward direction," end quote. Simon had previously hinted at appointing an independent monitor who would have more authority to enforce the settlement agreement, a step he said Friday he cannot take of his own accord. The Justice Department must request it. Friday's amendment also clears the way for the Department of Justice to formally endorse a transition plan from the current police oversight body, Independent Police Review, to an oversight board approved by voters in 2020. That oversight board won't be fully functional until at least 2025. The two sides will go back to court on July 27th for a status hearing to determine if the city has successfully lived up to its obligations and come into compliance. If that happens, the city will need to stay in compliance for 1 year before the settlement agreement is dissolved. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Today marks the anniversary of a deadly clash between pro-Russian and pro-European activists in Odessa, Ukraine in 2014 that killed 48 people and injured dozens more. Now, 8 years later, only soldiers were allowed to leave their homes in Odessa on Monday as the city locked down, as authorities feared the potential presence of Russian agents aimed at discord and destruction. Many believe Odessa, a key city in Ukraine's southwest, could be a target for Russian President Vladimir Putin's invasion. While Russian forces have failed to pose a real threat, city leaders are nonetheless wary. An airstrike in Odessa on Monday hit an essential bridge outside the city. The strike came shortly after a missile hit the Odessa airport runway and another bridge used for transportation, which further hampered Ukrainian movements. In the southern port city of Mariupol, more than 100 civilians were safely evacuated on Sunday. The rescue operation comes after weeks of failed efforts, with Russian forces bombarding Mariupol as they battle to make progress in their new offensive in the region. Vladislav Davidson, a fellow at the Atlantic Council, said that Russia, quote, "made a decision to destroy Mariupol, but they really want Odessa in one piece because it's really important to them psychologically. It's a big piece of their narrative and a jewel in their crown." U.S. defense officials have said the Russians' progress is minimal at best, and while troops have been moving into areas to declare victory, they then leave and let the Ukrainians take them back. In addition, the U.S. and its allies have stepped up their military support for Kyiv, with the surprise weekend trip to the Ukrainian capital by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Democratic lawmakers aimed at signaling growing Western support. First Lady Jill Biden is also set to travel to NATO members Romania and Slovakia this week to meet with Ukrainian families who have fled the war. The Kremlin has left itself with few global allies. Israel denounced comments by Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov comparing Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to Nazi leader Adolf Hitler. The European Union is nearing a deal on a Russian oil embargo, with an announcement expected as early as later this week. The agreement would bar imports of Russian oil, but would not be a full energy embargo and would not ban gas. Europe is far more reliant on Russian gas than on Russian oil. The Russian oil embargo is expected to be announced by EU leaders once all EU ambassadors have informally signed off on a draft that's being circulated this week. Janitors are an integral part of a building's operation, and that means they also play a role in making them greener. Janitors in downtown Portland have received a certification to help them do just that. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
Janitors in downtown Portland have received a unique certification that signals they're going green. Six janitors were certified through the Green Janitor Education Program, a 30-hour curriculum that focuses on energy, water, and environmental sustainability standards and green practices. Maggie Long is executive director of the union SEIU Local 49, which represents janitors in Portland. She says janitors are fundamental to a building's operation, performing duties that can help make them greener.
So it's these sort of day-to-day operation things that can have a huge impact in a building that janitors are uniquely positioned to play a role in.
Long says the certification is being offered to union janitors in commercial or residential buildings. She hopes hundreds more will be certified over the next 2 years. Karen Eichen is director of real estate services in Portland for Unico Properties, which collaborated with SEIU Local 49 on the certification. She says janitors are on the front lines of the climate fight in buildings, and Unico wants to invest in these workers.
It's important for Portlanders to reduce our environmental footprint, and the Green Janitor Education Program is one of the ways that we can do that. Commercial buildings have a responsibility, we believe, to be stewards of the environment and to set a good example.
Funding for the program comes in part from the Portland Clean Energy Fund, a city initiative focused on green jobs and renewable energy and energy efficiency investments. The National Certification Program was developed by the Building Skills Partnership. I'm Eric Tegedoff reporting.
Caregivers have demanding jobs that can cause emotional strain. The focus is on these healthcare providers this May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month. Eric Tegedoff has more.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and many people across the country are dealing with extra strain from COVID-19 over the past 2 years. Caregivers especially have demanding jobs that can be emotionally taxing. John Rose is an at-home healthcare aide in Washington State. He says the need for support might come when folks least expect it.
You don't think you need it until after you need it. It's sometimes that you think about it in advance. Usually when you hit some kind of a low point or you hit a wall and you realize I need something to move past this or push through this.
More than 800,000 Washingtonians provide care to someone, including family members and friends, according to the Washington State Department of Social and Health Services. Marissa Clyde is COO of the SEIU 775 Benefits Group, which provides benefits to more than 50,000 at-home caregivers in the state. Clyde says studies find anywhere from 40 to 70% of caregivers nationwide have symptoms of depression. She says caregivers tend to be isolated and can perform all-consuming work.
The pandemic in particular made this even worse for many caregivers, where the caregiver, not only were they worried about COVID symptoms and how they might affect their clients, but also for themselves.
Clyde says it's estimated Washington State will need 76,000 caregivers by 2030 to keep up with demand. She says it's also a diverse profession, so her group provides training and assistance in multiple languages. One important support SEIU 775 Benefits Group provides is mindfulness training to help people identify and work with daily stressors. The exercise is shown to reduce depression and relieve stress. Clyde says her group also provides emotional support coaching through a phone app.
It is really aimed at making sure that access to mental health and emotional health services is as easy as possible for caregivers so that they can access those services from where they are, and really to try and reduce all of those barriers that a traditional medical system might have.
I'm Eric Tegedoff reporting.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on defense contractors and military poisons with David Rosenberg, followed up by Noise Filter. Then at 6, stick around for Labor Radio. At 6:30, we'll hear Prison Pipeline, and then at 7, it's Let's Talk About Race. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a low of 49 degrees. Tomorrow will be cloudy with a high of 61. Today in history, in 1933, the modern legend of the Loch Ness Monster is born when a sighting makes local news. The newspaper Inverness Courier relates an account of a local couple who claimed to have seen, quote, an enormous animal rolling and plunging on the surface. Revelations in 1994 that the famous photo was a complete hoax has only slightly dampened the enthusiasm of tourists and investigators for the legendary beast of Loch Ness. The quote of the day is from American television producer, screenwriter, and author Shonda Rhimes, who said, quote, dreams are lovely, but they are just dreams, fleeting, ephemeral, pretty. But dreams do not come true just because you dream them. It's hard work that makes things happen. It's hard work that creates change. House Speaker makes a surprise trip to Ukraine. Walter Mondale is remembered as a great American, and workers around the globe celebrate their rights on May Day. With more on these stories, we go to Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Jim McGovern from Massachusetts. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you know, good to see you again. Yes.
You're welcome. Hi. Jason
Crow. Adam Schiff from California. Honored to meet you.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky greeted a group of U.S. lawmakers in Kyiv, the first such official delegation to visit Ukraine since the Russian invasion began 3 months ago. While there, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi spoke about security, humanitarian and economic assistance, and eventually rebuilding.
Your fight is a fight for everyone. And so our commitment is to be there for you until the fight is done.
The group then visited Poland in a show of support for NATO. Also on Sunday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken discussed additional military aid with Ukraine's foreign minister. Congress is debating a request from President Joe Biden to authorize $33 billion in support over the next 5 months. Friends, family, and leaders, including the president, gathered in a delayed celebration of the life of former Vice President Walter Mondale, who died last year at 93. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar worked as an intern for Mondale.
Tell the truth, obey the law, keep the peace. It's what mattered to him as a U.S. senator when he fought for civil rights and fair housing. It's what motivated him as our country's vice president when he insisted on being a true partner to President Carter, deserving of a place in the room where it happens.
President Biden spoke of his 5 decades of friendship with Mondale, calling him one of, quote, the greatest of all Americans, unquote. Former U.S. Congressman and Senator Robert Krueger passed away Saturday at the age of 86. Krueger served 2 U.S. House terms in the late 80s and was appointed as a U.S. Senator in Texas, filling the unfinished term of an appointee to President Clinton's cabinet. He also served as a U.S. ambassador twice. As of now, Krueger is the last Democratic senator from Texas. Rallies were held around the globe for May Day, also known as International Workers Day. In New York, union organizers, workers, and activists called for better working conditions.
If it ain't union, shut it down!
The protesters called out Amazon and Starbucks. Both have been accused of illegal union busting by the National Labor Relations Board. The White House Correspondents' Dinner was back on Saturday after a pandemic hiatus. Comedian Trevor Noah closed his routine with comments on the power of journalism and freedom of the press.
In America, you have the right to seek the truth and speak the truth, even if it makes people in power uncomfortable, even if it makes your viewers or your readers uncomfortable. You understand how amazing that is?
2,600 people attended the annual ritual, affectionately nicknamed the Nerd Prom. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Advocates with the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition would like to see the Catholic Church apologize to Indigenous people for the church's role in boarding schools. And Quapaw Nation Chairman Joseph Byrd has been selected to represent Eastern Oklahoma as a liaison to the U.S. Department of Justice. With these stories and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration plans to hold advisory committee meetings next month regarding COVID-19 vaccines, including emergency use for younger children. Currently, adults and children 5 and older are eligible for vaccines. There's yet to be approval for children under 5. FDA Commissioner Robert Califf on Friday told a group of journalists the FDA has a written request for emergency use authorization from Moderna, but the FDA does not have complete data. Califf says they'll act as quickly as possible, but stresses the need to analyze all information and data before making a decision.
There will be no delays. A
COVID vaccine for younger children could become available as early as June. That's when advisory committee meetings are tentatively scheduled. Califf says they're waiting for Pfizer's application. He took part in a question and answer panel in person at the Association of Healthcare Journalists 2022 conference in Austin. Advocates with the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition would like to see the Catholic Church apologize to American Indian and Alaska Native people for the church's role in U.S. boarding schools. The coalition would also like the church to make available boarding school and mission records to tribal nations, tribal citizens, boarding school survivors or descendants, and Native organizations to review. This follows Pope Francis's apology in April to Canada's Indigenous people for the Catholic Church's role in Indian residential schools. Healing Coalition board member Joni Romero says the Pope's apology is a step.
There's so much momentum happening right now, and much like our Métis, our Inuit, and First Nations relatives in Canada, we want an acknowledgement as well here in the United States. And it's important to also understand that each community and their respective experiences are going to be very different in terms of what they define as reparations, what that could look like. I think that the next opportunity would be for the Pope to come to the United States as well, to step foot on our soil here on Turtle Island and to begin having those conversations with our communities.
Healing Coalition Deputy Chief Executive Officer Samuel Torres says the coalition has helped with legislation in Congress to establish a Truth and Healing Commission similar to the one in Canada.
Canada is in some ways, shape, or form a bit further ahead than the United States. As it relates to the work in the coalition, we helped to write both H.R. 5444 and Senate Bill 2907, the Truth and Healing Commission Bill on Indian Boarding Schools Policy Act. And we are generating a lot of interest, doing a lot of education work and advocacy around the bill. But this is work that needs to be codified into law and needs to be included within the political discourse of the United States.
The Healing Coalition is seeking a response from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops about efforts in the U.S. to address the harms committed against Indigenous people across the country. The Pope's apology to Canada's Indigenous people follows meetings at the Vatican with First Nations, Métis, and Inuit delegates in late March to the beginning of April. Quapaw Nation Chairman Joseph Byrd has been selected to represent Eastern Oklahoma as a liaison to the U.S. Justice Department. He'll serve on the Tribal Nations Leadership Council, representing the Bureau of Indian Affairs Eastern Oklahoma District, which includes nearly 20 tribes. The council is set to meet with the U.S. Attorney General this month to discuss funding, the implementation of VAWA's reauthorization, missing and murdered Indigenous people, and public safety in Indian country. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A Wisconsin woman has ditched natural gas. Susan Miller's 90-year-old home now runs entirely on electricity. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In September 2021, Susan Millar of Madison, Wisconsin, called her utility company.
And I said, "Would you please turn off my gas?" And they were like, "Well, are you moving?" And I was like, "No, I just am not going to be using gas anymore."
She says she'd converted her 90-year-old home to run entirely on electricity instead of natural gas. Her commitment to going all electric started after she installed rooftop solar panels and learned that they were generating more electricity than she was using. But she still had a stove, water heater, and furnace that ran on gas. so she swapped out her gas range for an electric induction stovetop, and she replaced her water heater and furnace with electric heat pump systems. Burning natural gas creates climate warming pollution. So whether a homeowner has solar or not, she says going electric helps move the country toward an energy system that depends less on fossil fuels. And the climate benefits will grow as utilities add more renewable electricity to the grid.
The sooner we as consumers stop using fossil burning devices and start using only electric devices, then that's going to help drive that big shift away from the fossil fuel industry.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 2nd, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and David Rosenberg. The producer is Yasmin Kobanoglu, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Mary Sherman, Eric Tegedoff, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 8, it's Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy covering politics and current events while taking listener calls. At 9, it's Alternative Radio featuring lectures and interviews with progressive thinkers. At 10, it's Tin Can Phone. At 11, it's Times Like Now with Trevor Collins. Then at 11:30, it's Art Focus. Host Joseph Gallivan interviews artist Amanda Wojcik about her show Small Shields and Other Shapes on now at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. All of these KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are made possible by support from our members. We are currently in our spring membership hive drive. Now is a great time to support us over here at KBOO. If you'd like to become a member and support all this type of programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for an in-depth report on defense contractors and military poisons with David Rosenberg.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. Tonight, we're taking a look at military practices through two interviews by KBOO's David Rosenberg. One of the results of the Russian invasion of Ukraine is the increasing call for increased military spending in both the U.S. and Europe. But regardless of whether that happens, U.S. armed contractors are already benefiting from the war. Julia Gledhill is the co-author, along with William Hartung, of The New Gold Rush, How Pentagon Contractors Are Cashing In on the Ukraine Crisis. KBOO's David Rosenberg asked her if the Ukraine war was a bigger deal for defense contractors than some of the other wars the U.S. is involved in.
I don't know that it's bigger. On an objective level, I think that perhaps in the public conscience of the American people, it might be a bigger deal. We are paying a lot more attention to this particular war than other areas of conflict in which the United States is engaged. And I think that contractors are happy about that, yes.
Do you have any idea how much money they're making right now selling weapons?
That remains to be seen. It will be to the tune of billions of dollars, I expect, just because there are so many ways in which contractors are financially benefiting from the war in Ukraine at the moment. As we note in the piece, a big piece of their financial gains will be directly from replenishing inventories of arms and equipment that are being transferred to Ukraine right now.
What does this mean for the U.S. government? What's the relationship between the government and the contractors?
Well, here at the Project on Government Oversight, we talk a lot about the revolving door in the military-industrial congressional complex. There are many members of the U.S. government, both in the Pentagon and in Congress, who have ties to the defense industry. We've seen this most recently in news that several members of Congress are invested in defense companies that are involved in sending security assistance to Ukraine. But really what this means for government is that it's really critical for us right now to make sure that opportunists in the military-industrial congressional complex don't leverage this crisis for their own benefit or private gain. Much like the COVID relief packages, the rapidly increasing military aid for Ukraine presents opportunities for war profiteers to mask special interest goals with a popular, legitimate veneer, which in this case is defending democracy in Ukraine.
I was just going to ask you about war profiteering. What are the rules about that? Can the government crack down on that based on what these contractors have done so far? Or is that too hard to tell?
There are certainly things that the U.S. Congress can do to limit the amount of influence that defense contractors have on the policymaking process. That requires legislative action, and there are a lot of political obstacles to members of Congress taking that action. But we know that defense contractors spend an incredible amount of money every single year.